Welcome to Rights Radio for Homeowners and Pet Owners in Distress. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr, author of Defend Your Condo and Homeowner Rights and publisher of the first Homeowner's Defense Kit. Please visit my websites at starpublications.com, that's S-T-A-R-R, publications with an S, .com, or drjoycestarr, star with two R's, .com. The Homeowner's Defense Kit, which includes my book, is the first link at the top of the left navigation bar on both sites. Our topic today, condo board attorneys, HOA board attorneys, state bureaucrats, and other players proclaim that the overwhelming majority of association residents are actually satisfied with the performance of their boards. Our guest today vehemently disagrees. His organization is also planning to sue the Florida State Regulatory Agency responsible for condos and HOAs. I want to welcome Jan Bergman, founder and president of Cyber Citizens for Justice, that's ccfj.net. Jan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Joyce. Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And Jan, before we tackle the really important large issues, I'd like you to share a bit of your background with our listeners. To begin with, for example, how did you first get involved in protecting homeowners' rights?
Well, I retired, sold my business, and hoped to live happily ever after in Florida until I moved into a homeowners' association and found quickly out that the developer had lied to us, cheated, and used our money for his purposes. And as you can imagine, that got me quite upset.
I can imagine.
Well, you
discovered that the laws were favoring the associations. What was it that you uncovered in that early?
Yes, the association and the developer, because see, when finally 63 of our neighbors sued the developer, he used our association dues to defend the lawsuit, meaning he used our money to defend his wrongdoing.
My goodness, clever man, isn't he?
Why, clever man, it was allowed according to Florida statutes. In the meanwhile, we have changed the law, and developers can't use the money for that purpose anymore, but it was a big fight, and more or less we lost our fight because in the end, it was useless. You know, you're fighting windmills if your own money is being used to fight you.
Right. Well, what was the precipitating event, or exactly how did you end up founding an organization, a very important today national organization, to defend homeowner rights, CCFJ?
We first tried the normal way, the way I knew as a business person, you know, hire an attorney, go to court, and try your best. Well, then we found out that not only the laws were written against us, but as well our money was being used against us, and it dragged on and it dragged on and dragged on. So I finally contacted our local house representative and asked him what to make of it. And he was very nice, and he said, look, I've heard about this problem before. You're not the first one coming to me. He said, you can fight all you want with the laws written as they are. You more or less have no chance in the courtroom. That was a wake-up call, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried our luck in Tallahassee. Now, in Tallahassee, you're not counting for anything if you're just a plain citizen who comes alone, even with a good cause. And I came with two other neighbors there the first time. And we tried to talk to legislators, which is kind of difficult if nobody knows you. You may get to the legislative aides, but that's the watchdog in front of the office, and that's where your visit ends normally. So on our way through the Capitol, we met some other guys who had similar problems with HOAs. What? And that's how the saying goes, that's how it all started.
But what year was this that you founded CCFJ?
Well, we started this in 1998, but we officially founded CCFJ in 2000.
I think that probably makes you the second or third oldest, in quotes, oldest homeowner rights organization in the nation?
Well, kind of. Definitely, I think, one of the biggest in form of membership and effort. Because the problem we see all over the nation is that owners are not united, but the service providers like the CEI, the Community Association Institute, is. They're making their money. Homeowners just hope to buy a home and not buy parts of the association politics. And service providers are well organized. They have a lot of money to lose because homeowners association, condo owners associations, are actually a big cash cow for them. There's lots of money to be made. You know, we have here in Florida law firms, specialized law firms with 150 attorneys in one case, give or take. That shows you already what kind of business there is.
And 150 lawyers all dedicated to this issue?
In just one firm.
In just one firm.
There are plenty of others which are smaller, with 10, 20 attorneys. There's lots of single practitioners. It's a whole industry.
And yet, when the individual homeowner wants to find an attorney to help with an HOA problem or condo, they can't find one willing to assist the individual.
Well, but see, here comes the point. You have to look, where is the money? The money is with the association, and the big law firms, the specialized law firms, want to represent the association. First, they know they get their money, and second of all, there's a lot of money to be made because they have repeat business. The single owner doesn't. And these big law firms don't want a single owner to win because that would create case law against their associations they normally represent. That's why they may take your case, but they may not win it for you.
I think you should elaborate that for a moment, because it's a very important insight that most people are not aware of. They think, I hired an attorney, I paid an attorney, he should want me to win, and that may not be the case. Why?
Well, see, first of all, an attorney gets his or her money, win or lose. So they have no incentive to make you win or whatever, because they send you the bill even with a letter saying, sorry, we lost, but here's my final bill for $20,000. So that is not the point we have here. The issue is, you know, the more case law there is, the less interesting it is for attorneys. Because, see, if for every problem there is case law, you don't see these big trials anymore. So if an association loses in the lower court, like in circuit court, these attorneys, even if they might have a good case, are not interested to take this case to the appeals court, because if they get an appeals court ruling which is adverse to the association, they have created the case law they don't want. Because the next time a similar case comes up, you only have to see, oh, look, there's case law, they had the same problem, so well, we lose or we win anyway, so what's the big deal? So creating case law is adverse to their interest.
This is, I think, a revelation for most people. They do believe that when they pay their money, they're going to get the best possible service. Are there exceptions here? For example, the single attorney working out of a loan office, perhaps in their home, are they more likely to get loving care and attention?
Well, I would say we rather have attorneys who more or less only represent owners.
Okay.
Your chances there to get a favorable result is much better, because they're interested for you to win. Quite a lot of them are dedicated to the cause. I know quite a few attorneys who had their own sad experience with home and condo owners associations, and as you can imagine, they are absolutely willing to represent owners against these associations because they've seen for themselves what can happen.
That's important because I was having a discussion with a family just yesterday about that very fact that a number of attorneys are not, of course, do not have a background in condo law or HOA law, and then they find themselves in an HOA or condo muddle and don't know how to get out of it. Of course, there's also the problem of representing yourself. But it comes, again, as rather shocking to most people that just because you're an attorney doesn't mean that you can fight a condo or HOA battle. Can you comment on that?
Definitely, yes. And believe me, over the years, I have met lots of attorneys who are good attorneys in their field but have no clue about homeowners or condo owners association, got involved and suddenly faced specialized HOA attorneys and didn't know how to deal with it. You know, for example, you know, I had a guy, we look down at them normally and call them ambulance chaser, but he's a very, very successful attorney in his field. And he got a letter that he is being sued for brown spots on the lawn. So he called me and said, look, I'm lost. Can they do that? And he was an attorney, and he's well-known in Florida. And he said, so what do I do? I said, well, look, and kind of I showed him the laws and things like that. And in the end, he won. And after he won, he said to me, you know what? We're always being told that we ambulance chasers are unethical, but that's nothing compared to the way these association attorneys deal with the law.
Well, on this point, just again, so if you take a little bit further, of course, in order to fight back, you have to read and understand your documents. And one might think that it would be very easy for an attorney, an ambulance chaser, or any type of attorney, to read and fathom the documents. And yet, based on your experience and mine, that's not always the case.
Yeah, but see, you have to understand two things. First of all, the governing documents, you know, bylaws, deed restrictions, whatever you have there, in most of them, the language is not very clear. It's very vague. It's open to interpretation of anybody who feels like it. Then you have the Florida statutes. Don't forget, these Florida statutes, as we know them, are mostly written by these same specialized attorneys who are now making their money with it. So they are not interested in wording statutes which are easy to read. You know, we had, 2 years ago after the hurricanes, we had in one case where a condo hired four different attorneys for an opinion, and guess what? They got four different opinions which didn't go with each other. And actually two of the attorneys were from the same law firm, but they didn't know it. You know, that shows you clearly that there is a wide range of open field for interpretation. And don't forget, in many of these cases, it's not a matter of right or wrong. For attorneys, it's a matter of billing hours. You know, it's easy for them. You know, they write an opinion letter, charge $400 or $500 for it in the homeowners association because there is no regulatory agency, as you know. And the opinion letter is vague. You know, remember the case of the Jupiter flag man, which started all with an attorney saying, oh, you know, a flagpole, that's a lawn ornament. You know, lawn ornaments have to be approved, so this flagpole wasn't approved, so sue the guy. I mean, we all know in the meanwhile the outcome. The poor 95 homeowners in that community were faced with more than $200,000 worth of legal fees because the association lost the case. Clearly so, but it was predictable, but, you know, they relied on the opinion of an attorney. What people have to realize is that an opinion of an attorney is just that, an opinion. You know, the fact that he can write ESQ behind his name doesn't make his opinion right. You know, and I always say 50% of all attorneys lose. Because in court, only one really wins. and the other one loses. You know, but they all told their clients first, oh, we have a real good case, don't worry.
I think we lose sight of that fact.
Yeah, well, and see, that's when we come back to what I said earlier, you know, the attorneys don't really care because they get paid win or lose.
Right. What are some of the most serious, egregious examples of an abusive board in your experience?
Well, I think, the problem you see most is still the opportunity for boards to fine owners. You know, more or less, you have here regulations which create a kangaroo court where more or less the board can say, hey, you did it, and we tell you, and you pay the fine. There is no real court of law or proof or whatever. You know, I've had cases where a board fined a homeowner because the guest of the homeowner was seen speeding. You know, no measuring the speed or something. No. There was just the guy from the board. I observed the guy was speeding.
Oh, that's almost funny if it weren't sad.
But it is sad because it has cost that homeowner in the meanwhile more than $5,000.
No.
Because he wasn't willing to pay for it. As you can imagine, I would have never paid for it. But so far, the case is in court and he pays attorney's fees. You know, that is how far it goes, and that is so stupid. You know, we had a case where an old couple, he called me, he was crying on the phone. He didn't know what to do because his president and his wife were after him because his wife brought the wrong cake to the potluck dinner.
That,
you know, so the next day they got two violation letters in their mailbox, and the wife of the president yelled at them at the potluck dinner that she can't listen, she doesn't even know how to bake a cake. You know, these are things.
And they think they feel, or they have good reason to believe that there's a direct connection between.
Sure. In one
what
case,
what were they charged with?
Well, flowers on the balcony. These flowers were there since 7 years each year. So you don't have to be Einstein to figure out if you're getting yelled at by the president's wife 2 nights before and 2 days later you have a violation letter in your mailbox for things they are there since many years. Connection? Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Now, these people, when you say that an owner spent, for example, in the prior case, $5,000, can you explain to listeners how that could happen? How can the board take something like that actually to court, all the way to court? Why? Why and how?
Because, see, don't forget, the attorneys tell them, hey, you're in the right, you can violate, you go after them. And, you know, don't forget, many owners, even if they're right, they have to give up due to lack of money. You know, I know a guy who spent $487,000 in legal fees to inspect records of a condominium. Who can do that? And he still doesn't have them all.
You had mentioned that to me during a prior conversation. I think that's really amazing that he would put that type of money. Obviously, he had that money to burn, but it's still $500,000, no matter how you look at it, all to obtain the documents that should be available to him by law. By the way, is that person in Florida?
Yes.
All right. Now, in Florida, there are, as you mentioned, there's the DBPR, there's legislative, there's laws. And why didn't they protect him? I mean, they say that he's entitled to the documents.
Well, see, in here you have the big problem. You have lots of laws in the book, you know, on paper.
Mm-hmm.
But you already mentioned the DBPR. Laws are only as good as they are enforced. You know, if I have, for example, a law in the book saying a bank robber will go to jail if we catch him, that's fine. But if there's no police force catching him and no court sentencing him, he will not go to jail. And here you have statutes, you know, pages and pages and pages, but nobody to enforce them. I mean, in condos, you minimum have by name the division of the DBPR, but for HOAs, there is absolutely nobody.
There's no equivalent.
Just fight for themselves. That's it.
Well, there is, of course, a statute for HOAs.
Well, there is a statute, but it's
right.
A statute with no teeth.
So the DBPR doesn't take any cases related to HOAs?
Only recall and election.
Oh, okay. And what about other states? Now, we're talking here about Florida, but, of course, we have a national audience, and we're interested in what happens across the nation. Are there equivalent DBPRs, toothless or not, in other states? Is Florida unique in having this available?
Well, see, here comes the problem. Other states are more or less at the same stage as we are. I just name Arizona, Texas, California. You know, down south, you have a lot more associations than you have up north.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk to people up north, they even partially don't know what a homeowners association is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many of the people move down south for retirement, so the states where you have lots of retirees have lots of associations because the building boom created these associations. And since homeowners never watched, you know, they just, like I said, they just wanted to buy a home, the industry wrote the law as is. And for the industry, it's much more convenient if you have laws without teeth, because it's easier to fleece people if they're not protected.
Well, that stands to reason. It doesn't help anybody, does it? But in other words, across the nation, if you're in, for example, I did a consultation with a gentleman in Atlanta, and we couldn't find, it took us quite some time and lots of searching on the internet to even find what seemed to be the state law regarding condo rights.
There is barely any in
right.
Georgia. I know that because I get emails and telephone calls from people in Georgia. But see, in Georgia, homeowners association are more or less brand spanking new. You know, I know quite a few people who moved out of Florida and moved to Georgia just because there were no homeowners associations. See, you have to realize that some states have a lot more associations than others because the states promoted the building of these associations. See, for example, here in Florida, a builder who wants to build a community is being told you have to have a homeowners association. You know, don't forget that is one of the big reasons why we always say there is no choice. You know, the industry always comes back and says, oh, yeah, but if you don't want to live in a homeowners association, then don't move into one. I can tell you there are huge, huge areas here in Florida where everything that is available is within an association, period.
Does everyone who's in those areas know that they're part of an association? Are they handed documents when they should be, or do they often discover it belatedly?
Well, some discover it as they go along. You know, I had just had recently one lady, she said, I live here 3 years, and now I get a letter from an attorney that I never paid my dues. And I asked, what dues? Oh, you're in a homeowners association, and you should have paid your dues. So she said, well, it wouldn't have been reasonable that you should have sent me a bill. And they said, well, we didn't know you live here.
So did they fine her? They were finding
well, the
her, or they were sending her a warning letter?
Well, the attorney wanted $800 in legal fees for writing the letter.
So they billed her for writing a letter for something she was totally unaware of, and they knew it.
Yes. Hmm. But see, here we get back. As long as there is nobody regulating it, they can do anything they want. Because, see, the only way to beat them is spending lots of money in court, and most people don't have that money.
Now, What happens if a group of people find that their HOA or their condos, they have no board? Let's say it's a small group, only, you know, a relatively minor number of units, and no one wants to serve on the board. And therefore, effectively, the board is not operating. What can the owner do?
Well, in the homeowners association?
Yes.
Well, in many of these small ones, why do you need a board in the first place? Why do you need an association in the first place?
Well, that's really the point. The point is that perhaps you don't need to be an association. Perhaps you need to disband the association. Isn't
Which is easy, as you know, because they wrote the document, so you have a problem disbanding it. And you know, then you have the counties and the cities who don't want you to disband it, because don't forget, a homeowners association is kind of a double taxation. Because, see, in a homeowners association, your dues pay for services which are outside of an association paid for by the county or by the city. You know, for example, many of these mandatory homeowners associations have private roads. So if the roads bust, the homeowner has to pay. You know, I moved out of a homeowners association because I earned my money too hard to waste it on that kind of stuff. I call my county here and say, hey, there's a pothole. You know, I paid my property tax, so fix the pothole. If I live in a homeowners association, I call the board, and later on, in one way or the other, I get a bill for it. Because it's being paid by my association dues, and if there's not enough money to repair the road from the money they have in their kitty, then I get a letter that tell me to pay a special assessment.
Well, the point I wanted to target here is that where boards fail to convene, fail to give notice, just simply act as if it's a sorority or a fraternity, what option does the homeowner have if there's no one to turn to? For example, you said that in Florida, if you're in an HOA, even though there are statutes protecting you, since there's no one enforcing it, what do you do?
Why, your only way actually is to go to court. And that's the problem. Most people don't have the money to go to court. So you have people who say, hey, I'd rather do what the association wants, even if it's wrong. And I saw recently a lady tearing down her fence again. She got approval, built the fence, then was told, oops, this is not the right fence. You tear it down again. And she said, why? Cost me $4,000. The president told her, you better tear it down because we tell you so. So she said no at first until she got served with a lawsuit. Then she talked to an attorney, and the attorney told her, look, I need a retainer from you for $5,000 and we can fight it. She said, you know, for me it's easier to tear down the $4,000 fence than paying the $5,000 retainer.
Amazing.
Yeah, but that's the way it works, and that is the injustice. And, you know, and I always say, you know, I grew up close to the Berlin Wall. You know, we had East Germany over there as a bad example of how things should not be done. I tell you, some of these people there had more rights than people here in the Homeowners Association.
In East Germany?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In East Germany, nobody came and said, hey, you didn't pay your $250, I throw you out of your home because I foreclose on you.
Yes, let's talk about that for a moment, the level of foreclosures in this country. When you and I first met several years ago, circa 2000 and late 2004, homes were foreclosed, but just here and there. It hadn't exploded on the American scene. How do you see it today?
Well, it's getting real bad because, don't forget, our economy is dead. The real estate market is dead. People bought homes which were mostly often too expensive for their own wallet. Because, you know, the banks and the developers told them, oh, you know, we get you a real good mortgage and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, so they signed all kinds of documents moving into homes they couldn't afford, really. Now, with the cost of living here in Florida gone up and up and up, don't forget, our gas price tripled in the last few years. Just as an example, our property taxes are going through the roof. Our property insurance bills are, you know, you have to catch them with a lasso to see them. You know, people just can't afford it anymore. And, you know, one of the first things that is not being paid are the association dues. Now, here comes the attorney and says, oh, yeah, but if you don't lien and foreclose, you lose your right. So, kaboom, here you have the problem. But it is more or less a catch-22 because you foreclose on your neighbors and that neighbor doesn't pay your dues. So we see more and more, and I tell you, we're just at the beginning of this slump. This is just the start. It will get a hell lot worse before we're getting any better. People, associations just don't get the necessary dues to pay their bills. So here comes a letter, and I just talked to one lady yesterday. We have to raise a special assessment because a lot of the neighbors didn't pay their dues and we need to pay the bills. And that special assessment was $600. But she said, you know what? You know, I'm really stressed for money. You know, what do? I don't really have the $600 to give to them. So what do I do now? I said, what? I said, you know, the thing is, you either pay or you're the next one they foreclose upon. And she said, can they do that? I said, yes, they can, because they have all the power in the world, you know, a lot more power than our government. You know, if you don't pay your property tax, it takes about 4 years before they kick you out. You don't pay your association dues, a little tiny amount, and you're out of your home within 6 to 9 months.
That's rather amazing. So you don't pay your property tax, they're going to catch up with you, but it might take a few years. What can happen if you don't pay your property tax?
Well, they could foreclose on you as well, but they make you all kinds of offers because they really don't want your home. And it's kind of, maybe not. Associations, they foreclose, period. Because the attorneys tell the board that is your only way to do something and you have to watch. But it goes more and more and more down the drain because, see, let's say you have a $100,000 budget. Now, quite a few of your neighbors, out of financial reasons, can't pay anymore, right? So suddenly, you have a $100,000 budget, but you only have an income of $80,000. Who do you think pays the $20,000 necessary? The remaining people, the remaining owners who still pay. Now, here comes, they get a special assessment now. A few more can't pay the special assessment. So it goes more and more down. We have already the associations, they're in bankruptcy. We have already associations who can't pay the bills anymore. There are associations who just told the county, you take our common areas, we're not doing anything about it anymore. You know, this economy and real estate market is really creating havoc in our associations. And the fact that a lot of people get foreclosed upon, and no matter where or from who, by whom, associations or mortgage companies or whoever, these people and these houses are not paying dues anymore. So the association has to deal with a lot of less income. They can't pay the bills. You know, there was a condo in Orlando. The water got turned off. We have a homeowners association here in Orlando where they don't have TV anymore because the association didn't pay the cable company. You know, this goes on and on. And don't forget, we're just starting.
I think we have a caller on the line.
Yes, I'm calling from New Jersey.
Okay.
I live in a condominium of about 400 units in southern Jersey. And at this time of year, most of our residents are down where you are. And I'd like to just say I have some legal problems with the present board of directors, which may be going to court. However, which leads me to my question. I have retained a very large, over 100 lawyer law firm, which you spoke of, as a class. And basically, they were on a the side of the residents in another community in the state called Twin Rivers, which went to the New Jersey State Supreme Court. They didn't win what they wanted, but the court in its decision said, if you have a better instance of this, try again. So basically, I'm wondering, would you find the law firm defective in that sense?
Jan?
We talked about this earlier, and the problem is, I don't know the attorneys, but I know that quite a few of these big law firms, they're all part of a big nationwide network, which is called the Community Association Institute, and, you know, they make a lot of money from associations. So, you know, in my opinion, why should they be really interested in creating law, court rulings that favor the owners?
I understand. May I add also an additional point? The condo has an attorney, or association has an attorney, which my firm, if we go through it, will be fighting. It will not be a reliance on statutory law. Rather, they go to chancery court or equity law. Do you have any experience in handling cases like that?
Well, see, the problem is all these laws are state laws.
Yes.
And they differ widely. You know, we already talked about, for example, Georgia. You know, for example, what's right to do here in Florida may be wrong in Georgia and vice versa. And I know, because I see you talked about the Twin Rivers case, I know quite a few people in New Jersey.
Yes.
And in New Jersey, the laws are different than Florida laws again. So I can only talk about some general issues, or more or less my opinion, how I feel about it, but I don't know the party and the parties involved. I just think, in a way, it's a conflict of interest if the same kind of law firms represent owners on one side and associations on the other side, because it is very obvious they are normally on the other side of the fence.
That's true.
You know, so if I would have the choice, I would always hire an attorney who is normally not involved or part of a law firm that normally represents associations.
I see.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
what's your name again,
gentlemen? My name is Jason Sachs. I live in New Jersey.
Okay, Jason. Nice having you on the line. I hope you'll continue to
call
in and do your
listen.
Shows.
Thank you.
Okay. Jan, I want to go back to some of our questions. One of the questions that we had talked about before the show is, what are some of the more frequent problems and what could be done to prevent them? Well, we've already discussed some of the frequent problems, but what might an owner do to prevent things from cropping up in the first place?
There's very little you can do. Because, you know, the old saying among activists is, even the best homeowners association is only one election away from dictatorship. So, you know, you don't have, if you're still working, you know, here in Florida we have a lot of retired folks, but if you're still working, you have a hard time going to every board meeting and doing all the things they're always telling you to do. But even if you go, the chances that you one day run into problems are really big. I mean, I know there are associations out there you will never hear from. Everybody is happy, and that's fine. Funny enough, these are the associations who don't have a community association manager and who don't have an attorney on retainer. Because in that case, most often, the owners figure out among themselves how to deal with the issue and find solutions without getting into litigation and things like that.
That's interesting. Yes. Well, let's go now to the big, massive question. I mean, after all, we hear it repeatedly. The attorneys, the condo boards, state bureaucrats, etc., as we said before, claim everybody, the majority, are really quite happy and satisfied. And the picture we've painted in this particular show is quite different.
It is different, and I'm sorry to say it's a pathetic excuse for trying to cover up the real problem in order to make money.
Okay.
Let's start with the attorneys. For the attorneys, an unhappy community is the best money maker. If they're all happy, they don't need an attorney, correct? So attorneys often stir the pot, in my opinion. So do community association managers. The problem we see is that the system here allows certain humans to be power-hungry and to succeed being the power-monger in that association. They are being covered up by association manager and attorney who, in return, get the money of the association to subdue owners who don't agree with this president or the board. And you have more or less a catch-22, which you can't get out of. Any kind of system where you allow humans to be unregulated and to, don't have to be afraid of any kind of punishment, this thing will go down the drain. There is no argument about it, because we are all human, are we? And being human means as well that you have a private agenda, that you have personal feelings, that you have personal opinions, you have your personal friends, and that creates an environment which is not always good for the whole community. And if you then allow board members to violate the law, to even embezzle money and take kickbacks, and even if you catch them, nothing will happen to them, what do you think that tells the story about?
What about your plans to sue the DBPR, the Florida DBPR? Could you talk about that for a moment?
Well, it's very easy. See, you have to realize one thing. The DBPR, on one way, is supposed to regulate the condominiums and to enforce the laws of the condominiums. Now, the DBPR is getting paid from a $4 fee every condo owner here in Florida is paying. And there's lots of money coming in, so there's no shortage of funds. But the DBPR, as it is now, it has been different before. In the last few years, the DBPR didn't use the tools the legislators gave them to enforce these laws. You know, in former years, they filed cease and desist orders against boards who did things wrong. You know, they subpoenaed records if they had the complaints. Nowadays, what they're doing, they're sending 10 letters why they shouldn't get involved instead of sending one letter why they get involved and what should be done. Our division in the moment is a tiger without a tooth, and the executives of the DBPR are obviously rather falling asleep at the wheel instead of doing something. Much to the joy of the attorneys and the community association managers, who can just create havoc in these associations because they know there's nobody to protect these people. And, you know, what really caused it was the fact when the top executive of the division told a newspaper that everybody more or less in the condominium is so happy, there are just a few people who are unhappy and there's nothing anybody can do about. Now, this contradicts the form letters the DBPR is sending out, See, they have about 100 employees in the moment. I think it's 106 exactly. And they're sending out form letters, sorry, due to the heavy workload and to the many complaints we receive daily, it will take a while before we get back to you. Now, does that sound like everybody is happy? Because if you're happy, you don't file complaints, do you? You know, and here comes the point. You know, the money is there to hire the necessary people. I mean, I have to say one thing. If you don't pay people, you can only get what others don't want. So maybe one thing should be, you know, you should raise the salaries of the people working there a little bit, because, you know, the old saying goes, you get what you pay for.
But what are you suing them for exactly?
For failing to do the job.
Okay, so
we want the public to see, and we want these people in public under oath to have to state why they don't do their job.
Now, how do you do that? How do you, in other words, you hire an attorney, you're a nonprofit organization.
Right.
You hire an attorney.
Yes.
To do what exactly? To take them to court for, I mean, what, under what aegis, under what statute, how are you going about
that?
Well,
don't ask me exactly about the statute, but we have talked with a law firm in Tallahassee who specializes in these kind of things. And you can actually sue a division for failure to do the job.
Okay.
And what will happen is, you know, what we want is we want to depose the executives of the DBPR in order to be able to show the public that really nothing is done and that the money these condo owners pay is more or less wasted. That is what we want.
Now, this sounds so interesting.
We know we can't get a fortune because you can't sue the agency for money or whatever, you know, get a financial ruling in any way. That's not what we want. We just want to show why is there nothing done, and, you know, the public has to realize that what the service they get from this division they're paying for is more or less zero zip nada.
Now, what about other states? Have people come to you, have they heard about this and said, you know, we'd like to do the same in our state, California, Texas, Pennsylvania? Can they take action against state agencies as well?
Well, some of them don't even have that state agency. But, you know, as you know, we had the conference in the beginning of February in Broward County. And we had guests there from Texas, we had guests there from Virginia and from Illinois, and they were interested listeners, and they hope to achieve similar things we already achieved here in Florida, and they're working on it.
The lady from California couldn't
make it because she had an appointment in Washington, which she couldn't change.
I've heard some horrible stories out of Texas. One homeowner, and I believe the person was from an HOA, actually committed suicide.
Yes.
And there's apparently the trauma in Texas really quite severe. We don't hear a great deal about it in Florida, but it's happening. What have you heard?
Well, I mean, we didn't have suicide here in Florida, minimum, not that I know, which was directly related to HOA problems, but I know the best known case of problems in an HOA, I think, comes from Arizona, where a homeowner lost his retirement home to foreclosure because the HOA board claimed his bushes were not trimmed correctly. They foreclosed on his home, kicked him out of his home. He brought his wife back to California to his kids, came back to Arizona. And at the next board meeting, he came into the room with guns blasting and shot two board members to death and injured two others.
My.
I mean, that is definitely not what we hope for when we live in these communities. But, you know, people get desperate, you know, and if you work all your life to buy yourself a home and then lose it because you have a board who feels that your bushes are not trimmed correctly, to be very honest, that can really get you over the edge.
How did he actually lose his home over that?
They foreclosed on his home.
They foreclosed? In other words, they fined him. There was a process. First, they fined him.
Yes, they fined him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he wasn't there, they sent a gardener on his property to cut the bushes and the trees they were not happy with. And when he came back, they sent him his bill, and he told them more or less to go fly a kite. They went to court and they won, because, like I said, the laws are against the homeowner. When he couldn't pay the outrageous cost, you know, legal fees, you name it, he lost his home over it.
Goodness. And did the state of Arizona did they wake up? Was that a wake-up call for people in Arizona?
No, they even tried, in a way, from what I heard from Arizona, they even tried to cover it up because, you know, during the trial, the guy is now sitting on death row. You know, they try to minimize the problem that was created by the HOA.
Oh, he's on death row.
Oh, yes. Well, he shot two people to death.
Right. Has he had remorse or none at all?
Well, you get remorse when you're in death row, but
I think so.
He was mad enough at the time to do what he did.
Right.
And to be very honest, I mean, not that I say it's okay, but, you know, like I said, you know, you work all your life to buy a home and then somebody comes and takes it away for you for what you feel is not right. You may get mad.
We have about 2 minutes left, so I wondered in that time if you have any other cases that come to mind that are totally outrageous, something that might even make us laugh, if not cry.
Well, we have the case in St. Petersburg where the association sued the homeowner because the flowers in his flower bed were too red.
They were too red?
Yes, they were too red. You know, you can laugh over it, but the guy sure didn't laugh because it wasn't funny.
What happened as a result?
I don't know the outcome. I only know that he spent a lot of money in legal fees. He was a retired colonel, as far as I remember, and he said, hey, they're not getting me. I fought all my life for freedom. I'm not giving in to a stupid homeowners association board.
That's quite a story.
And you have the case of the Jupiter flagman. We talked about that. We had some other cases where people got sued for real stupid issues. And you know, like traffic violations. You know, we have in recent times you get more and more that boards feel they can be traffic cops and send owner's violation notices for speeding. And we have one case down in Broward County where the association said, okay, if you don't pay, we close the gate for you, the one nearest to you, and you have always to take the gate far away from you. You know, they use all kinds of tricks, and, you know, the attorneys play along. You know, in my opinion, it's the obligation of the attorney to tell them, hey, stop here. You know, you're violating the law. You can't do that. But no, they're only too happy to take these cases and make some extra bucks out of it.
Well, I think that's a very good symbol. Stop here, because we use that on our website. We have a good, nice stop sign about homeowner rights, so people should take a look at that. StarPublications.com, STARR, Publications.com. And Jan Bergman from CCFJ, I want to thank you for being with us today. It's been so enlightening and enjoyable and interesting, and I hope you'll come back.
Well, it was a pleasure, and thank you for having me.
All right. Take care.
Take care, John.
From Rights Radio, signing off. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Joe Vitale.